Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Oh, a timeless voice.
Sam Cooke, originator, actually, and popularizer of the Afro hairstyle. Some people don't know that.
I didn't know that. He had
the little mid-fro.
Sam Cooke.
He didn't have the big joint. He had the mid one that got blown out when things started getting styles. But he would style on you with the little side fro out there in L.A. before he was assassinated. That's a whole other story, but, you know, God bless him.
So I was telling Clinton this off the air. My wife made me watch the movie High Note over the weekend. She goes, I don't want to watch this movie by myself. I just paid for it. It stars Tracy Ellis Ross and Dakota Johnson. And I was stunned at how much I liked it. I thought it was really, really good. I went into it with like zero expectation of anything. Have you seen it?
What is it about?
No, I have not seen it. I've been wondering if I should see it. Is it really good?
Watch it and watch it with your girl. It is. I was shocked how much I liked it. Okay, so Clinton, here's the elevator pitch for High Note. Tracy Ellis Ross is basically playing her mom. She's an aging black super popular singer. She's Diana Ross's daughter,
right?
So she's not as old as Diana, obviously, but aging, yeah. And she hasn't done a album in 10 years, but still sells out every concert because she's who she is,
Diana.
And
Ross.
And right, and Dakota Johnson is her personal assistant who really wants to be a producer.
Oh, and that's so a good premise.
Dakota,
I like where we're going with that.
Dakota is moonlighting with, and she finds a guy that can really sing that she wants to kind of bring up, but she's got to balance both worlds. And I was very surprised at how much I liked it. So if you're looking for something to watch, Lindsay, you haven't seen it, have you?
I haven't yet, but I'll check it out.
Yeah, you guys check it out.
It's a good plane movie.
Yeah, it is. But if you're, I mean, we're in quarantine and everybody's looking for stuff to watch. I really enjoyed it. All right. So as Chris Morales mentioned in that open, right before the show, NASCAR did something I never thought they would do. You heard me making the argument for it yesterday. But I don't know if I even believed my own rhetoric that they could get rid of the Confederate flags because it has been such a staple at NASCAR races for such a long time. And Ryan McGee, who covers NASCAR for ESPN, is going to join us in about 10, 15 minutes to kind of give you guys perspective on what a big deal that is. But Clinton, as you know, you're a rarity. You're an African-American NASCAR fan.
Yep.
Like, for example, Bubba Wallace is the only African-American driver on the NASCAR circuit right now. You know,
correct.
We may get some more down the road. But you, I asked you off the top of the show if you were surprised by this, and you used the word stunned. Why?
There's a lot of things in America that would qualify as institutions, pillars, foundations of things that we like to believe are part of our value system. Some of those things are overtly a problem. Some of those things are less so an issue. But when you look at the number one symbol that indicates hatred that comes from this nation, the Confederate flag is it. That's it. End of story. Okay? You're not going to tell me about heritage versus hate. You can. I'm not going to listen to that. No way, no how. But the reason why it's important is because that very sort of academic, as people want to consider a discussion about what the place of the flag is in terms of history versus what else we do, NASCAR was the last major mainstream bastion holding it up as legitimate at all. You want to go to see Confederate flag? Go to a NASCAR race. That's what people think in their minds. And as a black NASCAR fan, I'll tell you this. I've been watching races for 20 years. I've never been in no track. Didn't plan on going to no tracks. I can watch the races from the safety of my own home.
Yeah.
Without getting harassed by hillbillies. You know, and I'm generalizing and I'm being funny, but my point is that that very thing wasn't just a detriment to brothers like me. That was part of the identity, sociologically. And just less than 2 months ago, we had a driver that was basically thrown out of the Cup Series because he dropped an N-bomb in the middle of an I-Series race on live television. And at this stage now, after Bubba Wallace gets up and says, nah, we're not doing that. Yeah, I'm driving a car that's all black with the Black Lives Matter on it. They actually decide to get rid of Confederate flags? Bruh, I don't curse on Twitter as a matter of course because I'm a professional journalist and I can use my words better than that. I wrote two words when I saw that. Holy S. I was shocked and I still am. Unbelievable moment in America.
And as I mentioned, Ryan McGee's going to join us here in 5 or 10 minutes to give us a perspective. You know, Ryan covers NASCAR weekly. He can tell you who's won every race and is in the middle of it and has been to a ton of races in person. And I think it, like you said, it is a cultural moment, and we'll get into that more in a second. But that was one of two things that happened today. The other thing was I've covered professional sports for 30 years. It's an unwritten, kind of unspoken thing that the city of Boston treats black people like crap. Bill Russell has spoken on it. Bill Russell, who won 11 titles for the Celtics, used to say that when he wasn't playing basketball, that he wasn't treated very well there.
Yeah, he said, I played for the Celtics, not for Boston. That's what he would say.
Right, which is, you know, says a lot more than one sentence. But particularly, when baseball players go to Boston, Adam Jones, the outfitter for the Orioles, has been very outspoken on this. And so is Torrey Hunter, the all-star for the Angels and the Red Sox. As a matter of fact, Torrey Hunter, I had to do the morning show last Friday when I lost that bet to Travis. Yep. And we tracked down Torrey Hunter because we had heard that he was talking about this openly now. He's retired. He's back in his hometown in Arkansas. And he said that when he played in Boston, it wasn't kind of quiet racism. It was overt racism. And we asked what he meant by that. And here's what Torrey Hunter said.
Man, it was a tough time. You know, we go there and I always wanted to play with Boston. And, you know, but my first time in 2000, not really my first time, but my first time hearing it was 2000. And I heard it and I looked up. It was two little boys, you know, saying the N-word. And I told the cop there, I told the parents, I mean, shut him up. And they was like, no. They throw their hands up like, you know, like it's a joke. I'm like, no, you're going to teach those two little boys right now, which from 2000, they might be grown-ups, and they got hate in their heart.
And, you know, normally we would just leave that to, you know, that's been the understanding, Clinton, that everybody knows it, that black players get treated like crap when they go to Boston, and we've all just kind of swept it under the rug. So imagine my surprise when today the Red Sox, on their own Twitter account that has more than 2 million followers, wrote this. Torrey Hunter's experience is real. If you doubt him because you've never heard it yourself, take it from us. It happens. Last year, there were 7 reported incidents at Fenway Park where fans use racial slurs, and those are just the ones we know about. And it's not only players. It happens to the dedicated black employees who work for us on game days. Their uniforms may be different, but their voices and experiences are just as important. The statement goes on, but basically what this was, Clinton, was the Red Sox openly acknowledging, yeah, we have a problem. Yeah, it's in our own ballpark. And now we're going to talk about it. We're not going to let this be our dirty little secret. We're going to face it head on. And I mean, I know this may sound obvious, but there's no way either one of these things happens a month ago. There's no way the momentum exists to get rid of Confederate flags at stock car races, at NASCAR races. And there's no way the Red Sox admit that they've got a problem with black players, particularly opposing players, and the way they're treated. It was as surprising to me, Clinton, as Roger Goodell showing up on video last week and saying, I was wrong, Black Lives Matter. I think there's a sea change going on.
Absolutely. And Boston, I'll give Boston a little credit. Let me say this real quick. I had never been to Boston before the 2018 World Series. There was a reason for that, just so you know. And one of the things I wrote during the 2018 World Series that was interesting is that in Boston, it's the first time the two managers of color had ever faced off in the World Series in baseball. And Boston changed the name of Yawkey Way unanimously. So, like, I'll give Boston some credit here. We're making moves. We're not exactly a long way from Bill Russell saying, I play for the Celtics, I don't play for Boston, but read the room, guys. Good read. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, there's no point at this stage. Like we said, if all these other dominoes are falling, what side of history do you want to stand on? In Boston, you might say it's quiet as kept in your world, Ireland. Ain't nothing quiet about it. That's why I brought up that point about the first time I've been there. Folks know that. And so maybe it, be it fair or not, that's not the point. But this is the kind of statement I need. We talked earlier in the show about how I don't need statements from everybody about any old thing, about what you support and what you don't. This is a real statement. This is something that says, our bad, our ballpark, our problem, our changes. I enjoyed that, not just as a baseball fan, but as an American overall. Well played out of you, Boston Red Sox.
And now I think if Torii Hunter was standing in the outfield, or whoever the next Torii Hunter is, if, you know, I was going to say Mookie Betts, but he was a Red Sox, so they wouldn't boo him. You know, if another great young black outfielder was in the outfield and he had two kids yelling the N-word at him, I would hope that the fans and the people who work at the stadium would take that person out.
Yeah.
Would say, hey, look, but you don't think we're there yet?
No. In Boston? Absolutely not. I mean, I think that we're at a place where they can recognize that they've got a problem and they can maybe legislate this out, but I don't think we're in a place in Boston where all of a sudden people are going to start loving black folks. That's well, just not realistic.
What I'm saying is if we can get to get those people out of Fenway Park, part of that statement today is there are well-established consequences for fans who use racial slurs and hate speech in our venue, and we know we have more work to do. Does this mean if it happens in their venue this summer, if baseball comes back, that you know, they haven't been throwing those people out? Do they throw them out now?
I don't know. That's something I'm not holding my breath on, just to let you know, but that's a good question. I mean, what is exactly on the rule book? We just talked about this with NASCAR in terms of what do you do if you find somebody with a Confederate flag? Do you warn them? Do you say, hey, buddy, keep it down over there? Or do you say, actually, get out? Or do you say, yeah, get out and never come back?
Well,
you know, there's a couple of different ways to go with this.
Yeah, that'll be a question we can throw at Ryan McGee, who is going to join us next. He's one of the hosts of Marty and McGee, which is one of the most entertaining shows on the radio. Clinton's been on it a bunch of times. I'm sure Marty is in Ryan is in popular demand today. Ryan McGee.
Yes.
Because of his NASCAR background. But we've got him coming up next. Clinton in for Mace. I'm John Ireland. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, Mason and Ireland show. Clinton Yates is in for Mace. We're covering a lot of different stuff. You know, right now, the baseball draft is going on. Is that a thing? Will you sit through the baseball draft, Clinton? I don't think I've ever watched the baseball draft.
Okay, so there's a couple things obviously happening with the draft this year that are different. Number one, it's only five rounds, so the television product becomes a completely different thing. Before, you're sitting around watching guys sitting on phones calling the numbers for 20 hours. Now we got the on the clock going. We got the pick is in going. Guys are breaking down swing planes. We got cameras in the draft homes creating lovely family moments for girlfriends, children, and draftees alike, which is my kind of programming. I love it when they go into the homes. This has been fun. Not gonna lie. I mean, I'm watching on mute, but you know, shouts to everybody here. Passon's up there. Mendoza's up there. It's a good little show. I'm liking it.
Yeah, I think the actual broadcast of drafts will never be the same because the NFL draft went so well. You know, they did such a good job, and now I think it's all in there. All right, our next guest you know well, Clinton. As a matter of fact, don't you appear occasionally on Marty and McGee? Have you not made an appearance on that program in the past?
I've made a couple of appearances on that program in the past, and I was most recently on explaining to Ryan how we're going to be going to all sorts of races this year. And then the COVID hit. And then it was like, oh, no. But now we will definitely be going to races again. And I'm very excited. How are you, Ryan?
Man, I'm so excited. For no other reason, I don't have to hold my breath like I've done so many times in my life.
when I have taken a friend who may not look exactly like me to the racetrack. Mm. And I go, you know, it's kind of like when I took my daughter to Vegas one time. She's like 8 years old. And it's like it's total containment and distraction because there's stuff you don't want your eight-year-old to see. And so you're like, hey, look at that. Hey, look at that. And so whenever I go to the racetrack with a friend of mine who, again, didn't have the same skin pigmentation as me, I would see all the Confederate flags. I go, hey, look over there. So now you and I just go to the track and have a great time.
Love it.
We're talking with Ryan McGee, one of the hosts of Marty and McGee, and Ryan's specialty, he covers a lot of things at ESPN, but NASCAR is at the top of the list. And Ryan, we're trying to explain to our audience, because we're out here in California, where NASCAR has taken off, but it certainly probably never will be as big as it is in the South, where you guys spend a lot of time. How significant is today's news? How big of a deal is it in that world?
I never thought I'd see in my lifetime. And that's no exaggeration. And, you know, the closest I ever thought we would come to NASCAR saying, leave your Confederate flags at home, was, you know, after the shootings at the church in Charleston, South Carolina in 2016, you know, NASCAR came out and said, you know, so there's this huge debate for the umpteenth time about the Confederate battle flag flying over the state house in Columbia, South Carolina, the capital of South Carolina. And so NASCAR came out and said, all right, everyone with a Confederate flag in the infield, if you bring it to us, you can trade it in for a different flag, the American flag, a NASCAR flag, your favorite driver, whatever. And not a lot of people did it, but I thought that's as far as NASCAR would go. Because quite frankly, I thought that's in the leadership of NASCAR at the time, that's about as gutsy as they would ever be. And so what happened today, what's happened, the Atlanta pre-race on Sunday. I mean, these are things, I mean, yep. Bubba Wallace, as we speak, at the Martinsville Speedway, was the hashtag Black Lives Matter race car, Richard Petty's race car at the Martinsville Speedway. These are things that I didn't see in my life. Didn't think I'd see in my lifetime. I wanted to so badly. And now it's happened. And, these are the things we can take away from the difficulty of the last couple weeks, which is the glaciers are moving. And if the NASCAR glacier can move, when it comes to taking a stand and things, I knew they already believed in. They just wouldn't take a stand on it. If that glacier can move, then man, I know any glacier can.
So one of the things that, you know, people talk about, of course, is there's policy, but then there's also policing in terms of what you're going to do if somebody shows up with a flag. Now, for me, there's three options that say three very different things. Number one is if we catch you with it outside, you ain't getting in, or we take it. Number two is, if we see you with it inside, you got to go. And number three is, if we see you with it inside, you got to go and you ain't never coming back. Where are we on what you think is going to actually happen when fans get back? Which, by the way, NASCAR's got a little bit of an out on this sort of politically because nobody's in the stands anyway. But where do you think we are when we get back to crowds in the stands with NASCAR?
Yeah, and just, you know, we're a week and a half away from 5,000 fans and 44 RVs being admitted to the Talladega Super Speedway, which is essentially in Anniston, Alabama, which doesn't have exactly the greatest history when it comes to these things. And so if there's going to be a test of it, it's going to happen really quickly, even with a very small group of people. And so I think to answer your question, I think it's going to be a mixture of A and B. And, you know, I worked for NASCAR for a couple of years. And in the NASCAR Productions. Think about it, NFL films with race cars. And one day at the racetrack, I believe it was at California Speedway, the Auto Club Speedway. I was in a helicopter with the licensing people, and they were flying around with military binoculars, scoping out people who were selling unlicensed merchandise. And if NASCAR wants to police this thing with the Confederate flag, I know they know how to do it. And so I'm really curious to see if they use that full power when the time comes. And you're right, they get a little time because there are no fans at the track now. There won't be a lot of fans for a while. You know, I'm hoping maybe that'll buy them some time to figure out what they're going to do. They have a plan. They just haven't told us what it is yet.
We're talking with Ryan McGee, one of the hosts of Marty McGee and a guy who covers NASCAR for ESPN. Ryan also does a lot of college football, and I want to ask you about that too, Ryan. But I've got to get in a really stupid question. And I don't know the answer to it. So I do the Laker games. I'm the radio play-by-play guy for the Lakers, and I do the games with Michael Thompson. I don't know if you know who that is. He played for the Lakers in the 80s.
Yeah, absolutely,
He's Clay's dad. So the reason when Michael was an NBA player, the reason he wore number 43 was because of Richard Petty. He was a huge Richard Petty fan. And so when somebody asked him, what number do you want to wear for a jersey? He said, I want to be the king. I want to be Richard Petty. I want to be 43. And so I was surprised that number, like in my sport, in the NBA, nobody's ever going to wear 8 or 24 because Kobe wore them.
Right.
But Bubba Wallace is driving around in a number 43 car. Do they not retire numbers in NASCAR? Because if they did, Richard Petty's number would probably be retired, right?
Yeah, and Brad Daugherty also wore 43 in the league. And Brad Daugherty, sure, who, of course, was an NBA All-Star, but grew up in the mountains of North Carolina and was a huge Richard Petty fan. And he co-owns a NASCAR team. He co-owns the number 47 car, JTG Daugherty, and worked for ESPN as a NASCAR analyst,
sure,
for years. They don't retire numbers. And the reason is only because there's only so many numbers. You know, they only go up to two digits. And so, if you start retiring numbers, you got to retire Dale Earnhardt. You got to retire Richard Petty. You got to retire the 21, I believe, of David Pearson. And the problem is there are only so many numbers. And so if you retire a number with a certain football team, you're okay. But if you start retiring numbers, in NASCAR, you're going to run out pretty quick. If they didn't retire Richard Petty, they're never going to retire anyone. And there was a big movement to retire the three when Dale Earnhardt died. And even Dale Earnhardt's family was like, if they didn't retire Richard Petty's number, they ain't retiring this one.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I asked. That's actually not as dumb of a question as I thought. The other thing is, Marty, I wanted to ask, or Marty, I did it again.
He's doing it again. Ryan. I corrected him, Ryan. Yeah. He was calling you Marty McGee all day. I had to jump in on the air. I said his name is Ryan. Marty's another person. I just want you to know that I depended on you as a friend, sir.
I know for a fact today Marty was at the Martinsville Speedway. He went to high school right around the corner from there. He grew up there. And today, when he got to the racetrack and set up to do Sports Center, the president of the Martinsville Speedway walked up and goes, "Hey, Ryan, thanks for coming out." And
excellent.
He's making mad. So, yeah, it's all right.
Okay. So, Ryan, we're hearing out here, you know, California's been pretty conservative with projecting what college football is going to be like out here, whether we're playing with fans, whether we let them in. The feeling I get where you are down in the South and in the area you normally cover is that it's all systems go, that they may put as many fans in there as possible, that it's going to be close to normal as possible. Is that a fair characterization of what you're expecting for college football in the fall?
Yeah, I mean, I have a real issue with, and you're talking to a guy who co-hosts a show on the SEC Network. I have a huge issue with the fact that they opened the buildings up on June 1st. I don't understand why you couldn't wait until middle of July, why you couldn't wait until August 1st, because the same people, and I'm speaking to you from almost precisely on the border of North and South Carolina,
okay,
the same people who every single day stop me in the grocery store and say, "Hey, we're going to get football back." Those are the people that I want to say to them, yes, put on a damn mask or it's not going to happen. You know, and so in the same states where they want it to come back, I would argue more than anywhere else, are the states that are coming back way too fast. I mean, look at the numbers. And so I just don't understand why. I don't want to hear anyone scream and yell in September when they can't go to a game at Bryant-Denny Stadium in Tuscaloosa when they were on the lake with 7,000 people in the middle of May. And unfortunately, I think that might be where it headed. I think we were going to have football. I think it's going to look very different depending on what region of the country you're living in. And I think there's still time to strip these schedules down and everyone play a regional schedule. I know for a fact that ACC and SEC schools have been talking. And so if Clemson decides it'd be a lot easier for them to go up the road and play Tennessee in the SEC than it is to get on a plane and fly somewhere, then they're going to look at doing that. And so, you know, Notre Dame's talking to the Big Ten. You know, instead of making half a season worth of trips into the ACC, if it's much safer for them to just get on a bus and go to Northwestern, then they might end up doing that. So this is the question no one can answer. And don't let anyone tell you that they know the answers, because they don't. And at the end of the day, all due respect to the ADs and Nick Saban and the trainer at Georgia or whatever, it's up to the university president. If they don't let the students back on campus, then the 100 football players are going to have to go home. And so no one has any idea what's going to happen. I think we'll have football. It's just going to be something different in every region of the country.
Last time I saw Ryan, we were in Charlotte on his set, chopping it up about hillbilly headlines. And I said, "You got to take me to a race this season." Which race is that going to be, Ryan?
I got my eye. I want to take you. I mean, Dover would be easy because I know, you know, you're watching.
That's my neck of the woods.
Honestly,
right.
As racetracks go, it ain't great. So if I'm going to take you to one, I'm going to take you to the big one, and we're going to Daytona. And, we're just going full on sensory overload. And then I'll start breaking into some other places. But I'll tell you this, Autoclay Speedway is a beautiful place to watch a race. And it's a much more chill vibe. But if you like palm trees and race cars, it ain't a bad way to spend a Sunday.
Hey, Ryan, thank you for doing this. We know you were in high demand today. We really appreciate you making time for us.
When Clinton Yates calls, I answer. Simple as that.
Thanks, man. Ryan, stay safe, man. Talk soon.
I love you, Ryan.
All right. That was great. That was a unique perspective on what is happening. Ryan just said he never thought he'd see it in his lifetime.
Hey, that's real. That's why I said I was getting emotional about it in the first segment. I mean, I didn't think I'd see it in my lifetime. I didn't think it'd even be something that was considered with any realistic chance in my lifetime. It's a groundbreaking moment as far as I'm concerned. Civil rights legit in this country.
All right, coming up next, we'll lighten things up, have some fun. Fast Track. I got questions for Clinton. He's got them for me. We'll tackle them next. 710 ESPN. All right, it's time for Fast Track. I got questions for Clinton. He's got them for me. We always start with a ceremonial coin flip. And so let's start. Let's make this one easy. Clinton, heads, today's announcement means no more Confederate flags show up at NASCAR races. We have shamed that out of the sport. Tails, they're still coming, and we're going to have to deal with how to police it. Call it in the air.
Heads.
Heads, no more Confederate flag.
All right, that means, Clinton, you get a choice. You can go first or you can defer. No advantage comes with either. What do you want to do?
Defer because I'm not sure I have all the questions, so okay. We're going to figure that out.
Fast
we'll buy a little time. So I'll start with the first one. The Big Rock Blue Marlin Tournament is known as one of the biggest fishing events in the country. Michael Jordan entered the 62nd installment of the tournament this week, and he made an immediate impact. Jordan and the crew on his boat, Catch 23, that's the name of the boat, reeled in a 442-pound blue marlin on Tuesday. That was the second day of the tournament in North Carolina yesterday. Now, Clinton, full disclosure, I'm not a fisherman. Never have been. So this could be a really stupid question. But this marlin was almost 500 pounds, 442 pounds. How do you even get it in the boat? Fishing poles are that strong? Don't you need like three guys to lift it into the boat? Can you explain this to me?
Yes. First of all, it's the line that's strong, not just the pole. There's two parts of that in terms of catching the fish. And secondarily, you've never seen those things that look like, they kind of look like what you used to hang, what are they called? Where you hang your clothes out to dry, like a clothesline thing where it's like a Y kind of situation.
Okay.
Like you can put the fish, there's like a thing that you can hold the fish above the surface level of the boat. It's like a, I don't know, it's like a.
Wait a minute. You can
like
hold
a hammock.
But one guy can do it? It's 500 pounds.
No. I mean, it takes a bunch to get it in, but you're not sinking the boat, is what I'm saying.
Right.
You got a contraption that can hold it up.
Funches, did you know that? Have you ever, do you know anything about fishing?
No, but I did see Jordan pull out, you know, that 500-pound fish or his team or whatever, and it's amazing how Michael Jordan can just do everything.
Right. Well, so somebody told Lindsay.
Except for run the Washington Wizards, don't get me started.
Lindsay, do you fish?
I have before, but I've never been like a big deep sea fisher person, you know.
So somebody told me if I watched the show Deadliest Catch, I would understand this better, that a lot of times that this is an issue when the fish is so big that you've got to pull it into the boat, that it's not easy, but they figure out a way to do it. But that astounds me that a 442-pound marlin, they just pull it out of the water and throw it on the boat.
That's a big fish.
Yeah.
Don't get it twisted. I mean, that's not average. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's not to be flip, but like, that is a big fish, you know? So.
Yeah, that is crazy to me. All right, Funch.
Fast Track.
All right. Throughout time, travelers have been known to take, this is a longie, by the way. Travelers have been known to take precious keepsakes with them on longer, dangerous journeys. A religious man may carry prayer beads or a rosary. Soldiers tend to bring treasured pictures of their loved ones, and superstitious sailors still carry amulets to ensure a smooth voyage. I did not know that. According to The Guardian... Wait, hold on. According to The Guardian, when two crew members of the SpaceX Falcon 9 set off on their historic space journey last week, their totem was a toy dinosaur, taken on the behest of their sons. Got more information here. They plan to leave it behind on the at the International Space Station. Lada, lada, lada. Here's the point. If you could fly to the moon or to the International Space Station, what would your totem item be?
Oh, that's a good question. What would I leave up there to show that I have been there? Okay, so I play a lot of golf. Like, I play more than most people should. I should be way better than I am. I just like playing more than I'm talented at it, but I like playing. And I've been playing, you know, basically 25 years.
Is Travis any good at golf?
What's that?
That's a joke. I'm joking. I said, Travis any good at golf?
Yeah, better than me. Beat me twice with the day off on the line. But Clint and I have won ever hole-in-one.
Oh,
and I got it on a father-son trip with my dad years ago. I think it was like 2009. We were up in Canada. I still have the ball. That's what I would leave. That's what I would leave in space. My one ball from the one hole-in-one that I ever had. What would you leave?
I like that, and I'm close. I'm on the same track, going a different direction. I would probably bring, because I'm a maniac, I'd bring a baseball glove. Now, if you're going up to the space station, like I probably had the course of my life and career, I probably had 7 gloves. I'm almost 40, so that makes sense. If I knew I was going to the International Space Station, I would go out of my way to get a glove, break it in, and try to play some sort of zero gravity catch, and then I would leave it there. That's exactly what I would do. Baseball, my first love. I would definitely bring the mitt up to space.
Lindsay, what would you leave up there?
I think if I were going to the moon, I would bring a baseball to see how far I could throw it. Because, I mean, it would just keep going and going and going. Yeah, we could play catch.
Wait a minute. The second one, if you threw it, wouldn't it just go off into space and be impossible to catch?
That's what I was going to say. It would just keep going and going and going. It would be like the farthest thrown baseball ever in history. I think it would be great. And then if I were going to go to the space station and leave something behind, I think that I would probably leave behind... like a hamster or something really weird.
A hamster? Like dead or alive?
You think a hamster is making it through reentry or whatever it's called?
You'd leave a live hamster so you'd, in essence, you'd kill it?
No, I think if people can, a hamster can, right?
Yeah.
Hold on. What? Can hamsters make the distance?
I think you're not thinking this through. I think what we're going to end up here is with a dead hamster.
Right.
Funch, what are you leaving up there?
Cape Canaveral.
I think I'd bring, like, some popcorn or something and leave it up there, like my empty bag of popcorn. That's probably what I'd leave up there.
That's not very significant, man.
I know it's not.
I'd bring an iPod. I'd bring, like, you know, an iPod with some cool tunes on it.
To leave there? What would you listen to on the way back?
Well, no, I would bring one just to leave there.
Oh, so like a taxi pod.
Notice I said an iPod, not like my phone. I can leave my phone there.
Good point.
All right. More Fast Track coming up next. Clinton Yates in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right. We roll on with Fast Track, and it's to me.
Fast Track.
All right, Clinton. According to Variety, movie theaters in California could begin reopening as early as June 12th. That's in 2 days. Today's the 10th. Under strict proposed guidelines that have been issued by the state's Department of Public Health. The rules for movie theaters would include requiring face coverings to be worn when entering and exiting, when obtaining refreshments at the concession stand, and whenever physical distancing cannot be maintained. Would you, Clinton Yates, be willing to go to the movies this weekend if you didn't have anybody sitting within 6 feet of you?
Absolutely not. And on top of that, if you're worried about where the second waves are going to start, it's in the movie theater. And you know why it's in the movie theater? Children is why it's in the movie theater. Because there's just too many people running around movie theater. I mean, if people end up going back en masse, movie theaters are like the biggest, somehow the largest, but yet the most intimate spaces that we kind of have in terms of how close you actually have to be to each other all the time.
There's really no way to clean a theater after each showing. You know what I mean?
Absolutely
not. You can go in there and spray a little, but that's not going to clean the whole theater.
Bro, not remotely. If your job is cleaning up movie theaters, you're doing work. People know that, and that's well before COVID. So I'm not going to a movie theater anytime soon. Not one that I do not get to drive my vehicle to, which, by the way, I am adamantly hoping for the comeback of the drive-in movie theater, but that's a whole other story. So no, I won't be going to the movie theater.
Lindsay, how about you? Would you be willing to go to the movies this week? What if I got you free tickets to go see something you wanted to see? Would you go?
Nope, not yet. I would stick to the drive-in.
Funch?
No, I don't think I'm going. There's nothing out right now anyway.
Yeah, and pretty much everything that's come out, like that movie High Note I liked that I was talking about, you can get everything on demand at home now. So I think even if they do open the theaters in 2 days, they're talking about opening these things on Friday. I don't think there's going to necessarily be giant crowds going to the movie theaters. But I could be wrong, Clinton. I mean, where they've opened things, you know, like where they've opened bars and restaurants, a lot of those are packed, depending on what state you're looking at. So we're going to get answers to that question this weekend. Funch.
Fast track.
Sidebar. Quick business idea. Movie theaters. Rent out your theaters to people who want to hang out with their friends and watch their own movies. It's a good idea. Okay, here we go. On this day in 1921, Babe Ruth broke the all-time home run record, hitting his 120th career home run to break the then SWAT king Roger Connors' record. Love me some pre-integration baseball. That's a joke. Ruth would go on to hit 714 career homers, setting a record that would then stand until 1974. So it was broken by, of course, Hank Aaron, who finished his career with 755. Barry Bonds would become the eventual home run king, passing Aaron's record in 2007. Do you remember where you were, John Ireland, on August 7th, 2007, when Barry Bonds hit the number 756 to break the all-time home run record?
I don't, but I remember where I was when Hank Aaron hit 715. And to me, Clinton, and this is weird, I don't recognize Barry Bonds as the home run king. I still think it's Henry Aaron.
We're done. Hang it up. I'm out of here.
Why?
You, Barry Bonds, you the best baseball player of all time. End of story.
Okay, but is it fair to acknowledge Henry Aaron as the all-time home run king?
The pitchers took the roids too, man. Barry Bonds is the best hitter of all time, is the best baseball player of all time. I love me some Henry Aaron. I'll tell you that story in a second. But I'm not taking anything away from Bonds. I can't do it. I'm part of that generation.
You'd put him in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so would
Big
I.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would put all the steroid guys in.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so my quick Henry Aaron story is that a couple years ago, I went to cover the Senior Bowl, right? You know, it's in Mobile, Alabama, which some of you may or may not have ever been to. Basically, a bunch of guys went around in funny helmets and weird jerseys so the scouts can look at them. Some of you might not know that Mobile, Alabama is where Hank Aaron played. And Mobile used to have a team. And, of course, Hank Aaron grew up in Mobile. So at the stadium where it was, the old Hank Aaron home was, like, on the grounds of the Mobile Bears stadium. So it rained one day at the Senior Bowl. Yeah, it rained one day at the Senior Bowl. And I said, you know what? Because, you know, I got to find me a baseball angle everywhere I go. Tell you what. So I walk on down to the stadium. And I was like, oh, man, it's raining. Like, are they going to let me in? Like, and I walk through the door. And the guy goes, what the hell are you doing here? Aren't you supposed to be on TV? And I was like, he goes, you want the keys? Go on in. I spent like 2 hours
in
the Henry Aaron Museum by myself, literally, just sitting there in the rain, checking everything out because I didn't have anything to do and the guys let me in because they knew I was from ESPN. It was really fun.
Like,
got to do a lot of stuff. It was one of the rare perks that I really enjoyed. Yeah.
I have a similar story. So I'm the year the Angels won the World Series, I guess it was 2002. I'm back in New York covering Angels Yankees, the playoff series. And of course, back then when we did live shots back to Los Angeles, it was 2 o'clock in the morning when we did the 11 o'clock news. So I'm standing on the third baseline at Yankee Stadium waiting for my live shot. And the security guard comes out. There are all the LA stations are there. And he goes, he goes, hey man, you guys are never going to be out here again. And he unlocked everything. He unlocked Monument Park. He unlocked the clubhouse. He unlocked the dugout.
Nice.
We ran the bases. We got to do everything. So I know the joy.
Ran the bases.
Felt.
I love it.
Yeah, it was great. All right,
cool.
Funch.
Fast track.
All right, let's end fast track with a game. Most people think both the Lakers and Clippers have a great chance to win the title this year. I have a list of 10 players. You guys tell me if these guys played for the Lakers, the Clippers, or both. Now, Funches I know for a fact, is going to be excellent at this game. He may go 10-0. So he's going last, but I'll alternate between Lindsay and Clinton to see who goes first. Let's see how you guys do. All right, Lindsay, first name, Norm Nixon. Lakers, Clippers, or both?
I'm going to go both.
Clinton.
Clippers.
Funch.
Both.
Both is the answer. He played for. He was traded for Byron Scott. So you ended up playing for both. All right, Clinton, Troy Hudson, Lakers, Clippers, or both?
Troy Hudson. He played for the Lakers, right?
Okay, Lindsay.
I'll say Clippers.
Funch.
Clippers.
Clippers is the correct answer. Oh, by the way, Lindsay, you're 2-0. All right, Lindsay, don't Nick Young, Swaggy P, Lakers, Clippers, or both?
Lakers.
Clinton.
Lakers.
Funch.
Both.
Both is the correct answer, and Fudges is 3-3.
I was going to say he played for the Lakers and the Wizards, because that's where I know him from. That's where I remember him from.
Yeah, he was a Wizard. All right, next name, Clinton. Jack Haley, Lakers, Clippers, or both?
Guessing both.
Okay, Lindsay.
I'm going to say Lakers.
All right, Clinton. All right, sorry, Fudge.
Yeah.
I think it's just the Clippers.
Wow, Lindsay is the only one to get that right. He never played for the Clippers. He only played for the Lakers,
right.
And Lindsay and Funches are tied. Lindsay, if you beat Funch at this game, it's the biggest upset in Mason and Ireland game history. All right, next one. Lindsay, Matt Barnes, Lakers, Clippers, or both?
Both.
Okay, Clinton. Matt Barnes.
Both? Damn, I'm getting confused. I'm confusing the Warriors
certainty.
And the Lakers. I know.
Funch, Lakers, Clippers, or both?
Both.
Both is the correct answer. It's Lindsay 4, Funch 4, Clinton 1. Chris Kamen. Clinton, Chris Kamen.
Both.
Lindsay.
I'm going to say Clippers.
All right, Funch.
Both.
Both, and Funch just takes the lead. Yeah, he played for both the Lakers and the Clippers. All right.
Chris Kamen went to Central Michigan University, home of the Chippewas. I know that because he was in college when I was in college, and I covered him, and he was a monster.
Very impressive. All right, Lindsay, Sedale 3, Lakers, Clippers, or both?
Clippers.
Clinton, Sedale 3.
I know Sedale 3 played for the Lakers. I don't know that he played for the Clippers, so I'll say the Lakers.
Funch.
Lakers.
Lakers is the correct answer. Funch is 6-7. All right, Lou Williams, Clinton. Sweet Lou. Lou Williams, Lakers, Clippers, or both?
It says the Clippers now, so I'll say both.
All right, Lindsay.
What, did he ever play for the Lakers?
You want to change or you want to go both?
No, I'm good. I'll say both.
Okay, Lindsay.
I'm going to say both.
Funch.
Both.
Both is the correct answer. Yeah, played for the Lakers and then got traded to the Rockets and moved on to the Clippers. All right, two left.
It was a stint.
Lindsay, Jamal Wilkes, Hall of Famer, Jamal Wilkes, Lakers, Clippers, or both?
Clippers.
Clinton.
Oh, Lakers.
Funch.
Lakers.
The answer, believe it or not, is both.
I know it.
He played his last year with the Clippers, but he played for the Warriors, won the title when he was a rookie, then played for the Lakers, then played for the Clippers. All right, this will decide it. Funches has 7. Lindsay has 5. Clinton has 4. But lucky for Clinton and Lindsay, this question is worth 3.5.
Hey.
All right? And Funch, you have to go first because you have the lead.
Oh!
Doug Christie, Funch. Lakers, Clippers, or both?
Oh, man.
This is hard.
That is, this is very hard.
For a lot of teams, dog.
Oh, man, I know. Lakers. Lakers.
Okay. Lindsay, Lakers, Clippers, or both?
I want to say Clippers, but since Funch said Lakers, I'll say both.
All right. Clinton.
Both. It's hard to believe for me that Doug Christie didn't make it to both of those squads in his whole career.
The answer is both, and Lindsay pulls off a gigantic upset.
Wow.
Funch, he played for the Lakers as a rookie and for the Clippers at the end of his career.
That's right.
Lindsay, job well done.
Nice.
All right, coming up next, do a little crosstalk. We'll get Alan Sliwa in here, Mason and Ireland, ESPN LA. All right, it's time for crosstalk today. It is Clinton Yates, Ireland, and Sliwa. Alan Sliwa joining the program. Sliwa, what's on your mind tonight, man? What's going on?
So I'm assuming we're all feeling good, I think, about where baseball's going. You mentioned this yesterday, John. You said that it's not a question if we're going to have baseball back, but how many games?
Right.
I'll ask the both of you, what feels right? Like, what's the right amount of games to properly under these circumstances, of course, you know, the NBA, NFL, Major League Soccer, everybody's in a similar position. But what's a number that feels right? Because they keep going back and forth, and I know there's a number of reasons why they're doing it. But if you're a fan out there, how can you walk away and say, okay, you know what? They did as best as they can with that season. How many games do you think that is?
I'm going to take a shot here. Clinton, I think they're going to play 60 because the 48 Manfred came back at Carl Ravitch on. Do you, Funch, dig up that bite from Rob Manfred announcing that he may mandate a season, and just let me know when you have it. If you hear Rob Manfred in this interview that he did today with Carl Ravitch, he basically says that they're going to play baseball, but he doesn't agree with everybody reporting that it's only going to be 48 games. Listen to this.
I'll be disappointed that we're unable to reach an agreement that allows us to play more games. But you know what? I think at the end of the day, the most important thing, and I'm not buying into your number of 48, the most important thing is that we play Major League Baseball in 2020, and I can tell you unequivocally we are going to play Major League Baseball this year.
Clinton, no way he says, I'm not buying into your number of 48, and then comes back and announces, we're playing 48. So I'm going 60. What do you think?
I think this bad boy needs to get higher. I was telling you guys that I was hanging out with the big leaguer for a story that's coming out Friday. It's actually Dominic Smith from the Mets, so I can reveal that now. And he was like, bro, we play anything less than 80, it's awkward. Straight up. He's like, just understand that. And I think the 81 number is good because, sidebar, people are sleeping on weather delays drastically affecting this number so that if the daggone dates get too short, all of a sudden you're going to have all sorts of stilted mess. So think about that. Secondarily, it's four 20 game quadrants. You know what I mean? And that to me breaks down nicely. I think that that's something that we're going to have to plan for too, because when guys start getting hurt, you're going to have to look at the season in terms of how you track it. 81 is perfect to me. Let's get to that.
John, you said 60. Is that more of a prediction, or that also feels good to you? That, you know what? I'm okay with that. I'm comfortable. We get 60 games in. You're happy with whatever that run looks like for all these teams.
No, I want as many games as possible. I would much rather Clinton be right and that we go for 80. I don't think you can go much higher than 80, Alan, just because you're running out of calendar.
Right.
And the owners seem to be sincere when they say they want the playoffs to start in October. All right, so let's say you start, if you played every day in August and September, that's 60. Every team's going to have to get a day off every once in a while, and I think it's getting pretty tight to play in the beginning of July. Even if you announced at the end of this week, I think the best you could hope for would be mid-July. So that's why I'm settling on 60. I think it marries the calendar to what might be available, but I hope I'm wrong. I hope Clinton's right, and it's more like, how do we get 80 in if they start in mid-July?
Double headers, John Ireland.
Back to the days of, I used to love double headers.
Yeah, double headers are great. But I mean, look, spark up interest in the game.
Would you guys be okay if they did the 7-inning double headers, as some people have proposed?
I don't mind that at all. I mean, they do that at every level of the game. That's not the big leagues. And at a time when you got to crunch space, I'm absolutely with that. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I wonder if, you know, if they do some of these doubleheaders, Clint, I feel like they're still going to keep the same structure, the 9-inning games. They'll try and keep it as close as possible to what is baseball norm. But I think there's something to that where, hey, it's not like doubleheaders are completely unheard of. It's unheard of in other sports. It's not unheard of when it comes to Major League Baseball. You could squeeze a few of those in. I don't know if there's a perfect number here, but I feel like, John, when you said 60, I'm like, damn, it's just, does that feel right? And I don't think it does. And even if it's not 80, but if you're in that 70 game mark, 75 games, I think you're going to get a lot of fans. Not to say that, you know, everybody's going to be complaining that we get to actually start Major League Baseball and try and finish off a season. But it feels like it's a bigger sample size that's necessary, that it's important to eventually crown a World Series champ, get a team to the playoffs. You guys know this, and I know this was talked about a lot. Nationals, what'd they start last year, 19-31?
Yo, bro. May. Yeah,
that's Clinton's
all right.
team.
May was a disaster. I tweeted what would have been the equivalent of, I think, 2 weeks ago, the Nationals, like a year ago, 2 weeks ago, like my memories came up, and I wrote, the Nationals are trying to ruin my summer. Turns out they didn't, but that's how dire it was. Crazy.
But 19-31, that's through 50 games. So we'll see what they end up doing. But I think this last week or so, you got to feel pretty good that, all right, we're going to get – they're going to give baseball an opportunity where at one point you thought maybe that's not going to happen.
Well, just remember, Alan, that baseball – The owners control the number, and they don't want to play a lot of games. The only reason I said 60 is because Rob Manfred poo-pooed 48. But I think that that's what they would come back and say. We didn't want to play, you know, even 50 games, but we're bringing, you know, in a show of good faith, we'll give you 60. So I think that that may be where it ends up. But I hope it's more than that. It sounds like we're in a baseball, though. Manfred was pretty definitive about that.
By the way, John, were you surprised at all the couple tweets and now an article from Woj on some players voicing some concern about the bubble? 40 to 50 players, I think, is what he said in there. And this is just according to sources. You know, it's kind of interesting to think about. It's, you know, here we are just doing everything to just want to get sports back, right? And when I saw the tweet, I'm reading the article, I'm saying to myself, I'm like, have I even really given that much thought, where you're thinking from a player's perspective? You're just assuming, yeah, everybody's signing up, they're all good for it. And it's not just the NBA. I wonder if we're going to start getting, you know, some more rumblings from, could be Major League Baseball as well, some of these other sports that come back, that there are players that are just not comfortable with this idea and concept. For the NBA, it's unique because it's technically 7 weeks, I think, without any of your family and friends if you go from training camp to the end of first round.
Okay, so there's several things you brought up in the way you asked that question. First of all, Woj is reporting that there may be 30 or 40 players, but along every step of the way, when the NBA came up with this Orlando campus idea, the players have been involved. Mm-hmm. Chris Paul has been involved. The Players Association has been involved. So the players have had a say in this. You asked if I was surprised. No, and I'll say what I said earlier in the show to Clinton. I think anybody who has a problem with health and safety should not be required or mandated to play. Mm-hmm. I just don't think you can do that. I think if somebody is generally concerned for their family, like Larry Nance, who's a great guy, who played for the Lakers until we traded him to the Cavs, has Crohn's disease. If he felt that going into the bubble or going onto the campus in a pandemic would jeopardize his health, and he wanted to just say, look, I've fought too hard to become an NBA player. I don't have a good immune system. I'm going to opt out. Now, Larry's on the Cavs, so they're one of the eight teams that doesn't have to go. So this is, it's probably not the best example I could have used. But if he was still in the Lakers and Larry said, I just don't feel safe, I don't think that they'd make them play. And I don't think that they should do that with other people. Clinton, what do you think? Do you think that it's going to would players feel undue pressure because all their teammates were going?
I think there's a certain amount of pressure, but I think there's also there's the health factor, but then there's also just the fun factor. It's like, yo, this is going to be extremely onerous, you know? If I've got a family, if I've got like a life situation that just doesn't really allow me to be in a bubble, I mean, I get it. It's their jobs. Don't get it twisted. I understand that. But this season is already so messed up and things are already so off kilter that it's kind of like, between everything that's happened in the country from COVID, quite frankly, between all the mental strain that black folks have been through in these past couple weeks in terms of what America is looking like, there's a very real possibility some guys are like, yo, I'm just, my head's not in it. I can't do this right now. You know what I'm saying? Or I don't want to do this because if I'm risking my body and let's just say I'm playing on a team like, I don't know, the Wizards, who aren't really competing at all, it's just kind of like, you know what, bro? I'm good. You know, it's just not worth
it. Now, here's the hardest part of this question. Let's say a player does that. He invokes what I'm saying is his right not to play. Should that player be paid?
I think so.
I do too.
Yeah, and I think they will be. You know, if there's a player out there that decides that he's not going to come, and John, you mentioned a good point. One of the first things you mentioned, it might be teams that are just, they know they're not going to win a championship, and there are definitely going to be teams that are part of this 22, you know, team race to this tournament in Orlando. If they think they're on the outside looking in, and the chances of them making it is very, very slim, I'm not saying they're going to do it for those reasons, but if they take that into account, and then on top of that, like you guys mentioned, from a health perspective, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, A, if it happens, and I wouldn't be surprised if the NBA and the players say, okay, you have every right to do that, and we're not going to stop you from getting paid because we're in a situation that nobody has ever faced in this country or in the world when it comes to this virus.
Yeah, the last thing the NBA needs to do is be adding extra problems to their plate. And if they do something like that, then they get in a whole other discussion about the, you know, good faith. It's just that's not something that they can fight right now. For me, they got to have all their hands on deck to just get the tournament underway, because that's what the, you know, the goal is.
By the way, Clinton, remember I had that question earlier in Fast Track about how they got the 440-pound marlin onto the boat?
Yeah.
One of our listeners, Jeff, just tweeted. Well, first he tweeted, yes, it was a very stupid question. And then he tweeted, Jordan's boat definitely has a door at the stern that opens, and you can pull the fish in through that. But it's still a 500-pound fish,
yeah, that's
right?
The issue is not the access point to the boat. The issue is the weight of the fish. And that thing is obviously, I don't know, slippery. So, yeah, that's a yeah. tricky maneuver for sure.
That's a lot of fish, man. All right. We'll take a break, come back. More crosstalk. Slee was here. Clinton Yates in for Mace, ESPN LA. All right, crosstalk rolling on. Sleeway, you got something to read?
Yes, sir. Crosstalk on 710 ESPN is powered by Power Pro Heating and Air and their Cross-Trade Power Pro Service Specials. Great cross-trade service for our listeners. $99 drain cleaning. You can visit powerproplumbing.com.
And a public service announcement. It's like 100 degrees. You do not want your AC to go out at a time like this. If your AC is making noises, get on the phone, call Power Pro. All right, so Clinton and I talked a little bit about this earlier, Sliwa, but I want to get your thoughts on it too. Reggie Bush was quote-unquote reinstated at USC. I never thought he should have been disassociated with the school. I thought that was the NCAA being a bully and being mean and being stupid. But what do you guys think about the concept of, and they do this a lot in the Olympics, like you can have your gold medal taken away. And in college football, you can have wins vacated. And they made Reggie Bush give his Heisman Trophy back. Clinton, what do you think in general of retroactive punishment? So in other words, we've already seen the games. We've already seen the players. Going back and taking away wins, does that make any sense to you?
Never been a big fan of that. And that's why this situation was so kind of ridiculous. It was like, all right, well, you already vacated the wins, and you're going to take the trophy, and you're going to disassociate him. Like, it was like all this pylon stuff. And, like, the wins, I mean, I guess the wins matter because people, you know, take down the banners, you know, but ultimately the experiences don't change. Like I said, nobody's going to forget watching him torch Fresno State with that vicious run. That's just not going to change. And so, to me, that, like, I don't love the vacating of the things, but it's just the adding up of all of them is what I remember being just like a lot for considering what happened, which was he's just another college kid who got something that he probably should have deserved anyway.
You know? Sliwa, you're from
John. You know, I was going to say, you know what? I never understood the punishment. I mean, just think about this: not just the punishment on Reggie Bush, the punishment on USC. How many scholarships did they end up losing? About 30 scholarships,
yeah, 10 a year for 3 years.
The 2-year bowl ban or whatever it was. I mean, to go back and say it's different if you got the Houston Astros and they're literally cheating, right? There's a cheating scandal. They have found a way illegally to take advantage of the game. Did USC and Reggie Bush do that? You know what I mean? Like, I never understood when you go back and take away the games, like you mentioned, Clinton, Reggie Bush, you know, running on Fresno State and putting up incredible numbers over the 3 years that he was there at USC. It's a tough one to swallow, and it's a terrible taste, I think, in my mouth and a lot of other people's mouth. The amount of money that Reggie Bush made for not just USC, but how about just the NCAA? How about all those primetime games on a Saturday night? It's tough to, and I know that's changing right now when it comes to, you know, college games, but whatever USC did or whatever Reggie Bush did for his family, I can only imagine how many mansions he would have probably bought them if he was getting a percentage of what he was making for NCAA.
Exactly. I'm totally with you, man. Like I said, it's
Alan,
just,
you're from San Diego. How when do you remember first hearing about Reggie Bush? Did you hear about him in high school or not till he made it to USC?
So he went to Helix High School. We started hearing about him when he was in high school. His quarterback, actually, if you guys remember, was Alex Smith. So it was both of them were playing for Helix High at the time. So started hearing about him just a little bit in high school. But once he came to USC, and he had not just his roots in San Diego, but he was on such a national stage. He always put 619, if you remember, 619 under his, that's the area code for San Diego. Man, the dude was not only unbelievable, but he was representing also a city that doesn't get that much representation. So I think it had a lot to do with that as well.
That high school he went to there's like a strain, like a bunch of people have come out, like mm-hmm. Dennis Hopper, the actor, came out of there.
Dennis Hopper.
Yeah.
Greatest Dennis Hopper role quickly. Mine is Speed.
Well, Easy
Never
Rider.
At me. I know, but like Easy Rider kind of doesn't count. That's like in the Hall of Fame. So like that's kind of unfair.
Hoosiers.
But like other roles. Mine is Speed. I love him in Speed.
Okay. So. By the way, Speed came out on this day in 1994. Here's a really tough. Here's a really tough question. Keanu Reeves time capsule movie. You've got one movie to put in a time capsule to show people who Keanu Reeves was. What are you putting in?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
I'm probably going Matrix.
Is this a serious question?
Yep.
Guys, we're in Los Angeles, Utah. Give me two. Point Break. Bad question.
Point Break. Point Break, great as well.
Neo in the Matrix is, but I would actually
not a bad question. I didn't mean to say that. I just meant for me, okay. It's an easy answer.
And Johnny Utah, do you remember where he went to college? He was a quarterback at Ohio State. Yeah, but
Anthony Kiedis in that movie too.
Here's where I would go. John Wick is unbelievable.
Good.
He kills, in the three John Wick movies, I think Keanu kills close to 200 people in three movies. It's pretty unbelievable.
Also, Bill and Ted's 3 coming out soon. Pumped about that.
Bill and Ted's, he's had a bunch of kind of weird. He had three John Wicks. He had three Matrixes.
Matrices.
Matrix is probably his most recognizable
role. I remember
one
thing role. From high school math.
He put out, I think last week, Jesse was playing it for us, for San Dimas High School, they put out a message for their graduation. That's just really cool
Bill
for him
and Ted
to do.
Did. Yeah.
Exactly. Bill and Ted did. So they were doing one of those. And by the way, Clint, how do you think that one will do now? How long has it been now?
I don't know, but Ireland's got me thinking about John Wick.
89, 90?
It was early. Like, and Ireland's got me thinking about John Wick, and I'm thinking that, like, in the power rankings, John Wick might be at the top. But for
it's
my favorites,
good.
I'm going
the
with
Johnny
Point
Utah
Break.
Was a good call. That was an excellent movie.
I love that movie, so
by the way, circling back to the original question, Helix High, where Reggie Bush went to college, you know who the most famous alum at Helix High is, right?
I do not.
All right, I'll give you guys a hint, and we'll see which one of you guys gets it first, okay?
Trying to think if this guy went there.
NBA Hall of Famer. Arguably the second greatest college basketball player ever in the history of college basketball. His record in college.
I think I know.
I think was 88-2. Who is it, Alan?
I think it's Bill Walton.
It is Bill Walton. Bill Walton went to Helix High. Yeah.
Nice. That's a cool name for a high school, too, Helix High.
And
they dominated, too. Every year they dominated down in San Diego. I mean, there's some other, high schools that are known, but Helix High, every single year, it's like everything was coming for basketball and for football.
Nice.
Carl Durrell, now the head coach at Colorado, went to Helix High. Former UCLA head coach. All right, hey, Slee, what's coming up on the big nighttime extravaganza tonight?
The nighttime extravaganza. Charles Robinson, senior NFL reporter for Yahoo, he has an article. Goodell has a second chance to fix Kaepernick mistake. His legacy might depend on it. So we'll get kind of his thoughts on that. By the way, how much did you guys hit on? I know we mentioned it a little bit yesterday on Cap today, Colin Kaepernick. It seems that momentum is definitely, sounds like it's pushing There's so many players now actively speaking. They want to see Cap back in the league. We'll see what happens. I mean, you know, it's
yeah. Well, let me ask you guys a question. If you're Kaepernick, do you want to do it?
Right.
They now need him more than he needs them.
The AP
Go ahead, Alan. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, Clint, the AP had a story about how he's been so powerful and his message has been, you know, amazing since he's been out of the league and just kind of continue to grow organically, you know, trying to raise awareness for police brutality and everything else that Cap is doing now, that they were trying to make the argument that he'd be better off for his movement not to make it back to the NFL. Me personally, I'd like to see him in there. I'd love for him to get another shot, especially 3+ years that he wasn't allowed in.
Alan, what I was saying is that I think for him, if he wants to do it for his own purposes, that's fine. But I don't need him to get back in the NFL to validate his efforts at all. Just look around in the country. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It was obviously worth it. The football thing for him, for me, is personal now. And it's not something for me as a fan of either football or the cause I necessarily need.
I actually think that, you know where a good spot for him would be Kansas City to back up Mahomes. No. Because Mahomes would be firmly entrenched as a starter, and then if he got hurt, you'd have a really fun, good backup quarterback. That'd be really cool. Yeah, I hope that happens. Anybody else besides Charles Robinson, Saliwa?
Charles Robinson, Evan Drellick covers the
we've had him
baseball
on.
For the Athletic, and then Jeff Carlisle will talk a little bit about MLS coming back.
Okay, 6:24, we hit the door. Thank you, Clinton. Always a pleasure.
Never a chore. Good to see you.
All right, man. You too. Saliwa next. ESPN LA 710.